Okay. So
Next
you've
question.
got, yeah, sure, carry on.
Elizabeth, did you want to ask the live buses question? Do you want to do it, or do you want me to?
Oh, now we can't hear.
Can I hear? Okay, I'll start there. Like, the
Yep.
question we had is, when you're going back in the genealogy and you're dealing with, you know, going back a past generation, okay, in live buzzing, and you're cleansing that and dealing with the bloodline, does that affect also, for example, if you had children or whatever, that would that affect them or not affect them? It would affect them if you, like, if I, it affect my generation if I hadn't yet had my children going forward, but if I've already had children, whatever, they're not affected, and they would have to be cleansed of that as well because what the contaminants or whatever you want to call it are already on them. The
Yeah.
question makes sense what I'm asking?
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. I think this is an interesting question because what we do when we deal with the generations, are we dealing with it in a time frame, like we're going back and dealing with as it operated in time, or are we just doing it that it's affecting us in the present? I would probably have to think that it must be that we are dealing with it now by asking God to show us what the generational issues are. If we actually went back on the timeline and maybe did some things, you know, like Gary Beaton does, and there's a sense where they've gone back in time, and if that then affected the future, we would never know about it because it would have just happened and the future would have changed from that point, so we wouldn't know. But if we're just dealing with it from a point of view of God is showing us in that generation, this happened, this came within to my genetic makeup, or this came into my bloodline, then once we then deal with that issue, it should then, going forward, definitely not be affecting us any longer. But if our children have already been affected by it, if we carry the authority in that bloodline, then we can certainly deal with it judicially in the court system to see the effect of that broken over their lives. It depends really what age they are, I think. Because if they are below the age of responsibility and we are responsible for them and we have judicial authority over them, then I think we can break that. I mean, when some of our children were little, I mean, I used to pray deliverance over them while they were asleep. And they would, you could see their body reacting to the things, but they weren't awake. I think once someone is engaged in anything themselves, then that reinforces the enemy's right to operate in their lives because they have cooperated with that themselves. So, you know, if a child, let's say, is 10 or 8 or something, and whatever the particular access point that the enemy had not yet been activated in them, therefore, the enemy would have no right in their lives according to what they've done. Then, if we deal with it in our lives and minister that to them in the courts, or even personally, if we pray for them, then there should be no reason why that shouldn't just deal with that because we have the right of being their parents, dealing with that in the spiritual realm. If they've done something themselves, I would say that they would also need to renounce it, repent of it, and deal with it themselves. So I don't think it's automatic if someone has engaged in that activity or whatever it might be. But I would say if they haven't, then the only legal right there is within the parents passing it on. So if it's dealt with in us, then I think we can deal with it in them. difficulty is obviously knowing, depending on what the situation is, knowing exactly what that works out at and how that works. But certainly live busting, you know, is effective in identifying the generational areas where things happened, looking to, you know, identify then how you then bring that back into alignment with God. And I think, you know, there are things like where we may have dissociated ourselves because of instances in our past that have different parts emotionally that have dissociated, and you need to bring them back together. If someone has not actually done anything themselves, then there should be no, they should not have had any dissociative stuff. So that wouldn't, that would effectively mean that you wouldn't have to deal with anything along those lines. But you know, I think part of the main thing is to ask God each time, just like in every live busting situation, you ask God to actually give you the revelation and show you, is there anything else we need to do here? You know, is there anything else that is operating or whatever? Then I would say you can do that the same thing, because you can also live bust places, and you can live bust churches, and you can live bust nations, and you can live bust anything by just following the same route. You know, if you have any sphere of authority in it, I think you'd need to have some sort of sense of authority to be able to live bust a nation or an area. But if you have, then there's no reason why you can't do the same thing. Ask God to show you what is the area where the enemy has access in our area, where did it come from, what are the roots, you know, what do we need to do to deal with that, you know, bring it under the authority of the blood of Jesus. So, yeah, I think these things will come up. You know, a lot of interesting questions, I think, will come up as we look to go forward in these things. And we just have to keep seeking God for continued revelation about it.
I was also wondering, like, God always in the Old Testament, and that, like, if you're under someone's household, like maybe Abraham's or Noah's household, all those people were affected by God and they were protected.
Yeah.
And so if the kids are older and they live in our household, would that have an effect on them? Because really they're kind of under our authority still, our covering.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I'm not sure that would apply to genetic things, really, because you think of genetic stuff, that's something that's actually already taken place. So genetically, we would have passed on to our children what was in us. We couldn't have failed to do it. But if we change it in us, then, and they're still under our authority or covering in that sense, in terms of covenantly, then we should be able to change it in them, providing they haven't actually cooperated with it. If they've cooperated it, I think they would then be responsible for their own dealing with it. We could certainly help, because we can deal with it in us. That means there's no ongoing open access for that to take place in future generations. You know, the sins of the fathers, it says, was visited on third and fourth generation. So if we deal with it, then there should be no need to revisit it. But if someone, our children, have also done it, then that takes it another generation. And each time a generation takes it, it takes it another generation. So, yeah, I would say that we have access to bless and we have access to deal with things, but the people have to be responsible for the things that they've done. Even if we go to the courts identificationally on behalf of people, that really only removes the blindness that should be on their eyes so that they can see. But then they need to then function in that and deal with it themselves. And it becomes tricky, obviously, when someone's maybe not walking with God, or maybe they're not in the same place spiritually and they may not see those issues. And then it's a matter of looking to continue to stand in the gap and protect them by loosening them from the effects of it. But ultimately, you want them to acknowledge that. Because if someone's sinned, they need to confess that sin to receive what's already accomplished for them in the cross. So Yeah, that's how I would see that. Okay, anything else?
Yeah, we just wanted to ask a question about the blue light, because we were going up with regarding some things to burning ones and so forth, and I saw a scroll that looked like a blue light, and it was rolled out like that, but the blue light was kind of it's very like a liquid blue light. And then Deborah saw the same kind of blue light. So I was wondering exactly, and it seems to me like it looks like, you know, those dimensional things, like you could push your hand through something and go to someplace else. So I was wondering what it is. Is there something about a blue light? I think I've heard something about it, creative blue light. If you could just expand on that some more.
I don't really know, to be honest. I think blue as a color, I mean, I've seen lots of the scrolls that I see are blue and carry a blue color. Most of my engagement with that whole blue dimension, and a lot of the things, you know, if you notice some of the pictures I put out are blue in terms of going through veils, going through dimensional things. Blue seems to be a color that is a transition between one thing to another. That's just, you know, what I've seen. Biblically, you know, in terms of the seven spirits of God, I think you've got blue there, like the spirit of might. But you also have blue in terms of the spirit of, well, wisdom herself is blue-colored in terms of her skin. So there's something about that, and where wisdom's heights are, you know, the pillar that is there of wisdom is blue, and looks like that light. So I think it's probably something to do with, you know, a transition from one realm to another into something of a dimensional shift, that blue seems to be the color that opens that shift. And so when you see it around a scroll, it is like representing a dimensional shift into something fresh, into something new, into a new season, through into a different area. That's really where I've seen and encountered blue. It always seems to be between going through dimensions or going through veils that it seems to look blue or feel blue. 'Cause it's like blue... The thing is, it's like blue carries a feeling with it. It's just different in the realm of heaven, because it carries, you know, different senses of dimension to it than it does in this realm, you know. And I think a lot of these things, again, the key to it is to take the images and the symbolism of the things you see in any encounter, and as you journal them, take those encounters back to a place of intimacy and just talk to God about it and meditate around it, so that revelation will flow from it to us. Anything I don't understand, I don't try and usually analyze it during encounter. I journal it, and then I go back to it and take something like that. You know, recently in some of my encounters, you know, I've been to some places really where I sort of haven't been before, and I really just want to engage in the encounter to the fullness of it, and then go back to it later if I need to query something, find out more about it, see, well, what was that for? You know, I think sometimes when you're talking to God, and it's a very much a God encounter, and you're talking to Him, then it's great to ask things. A lot of the things that I get shown are things that are openings to new things, new places, and I don't want to miss anything of the engagement by asking stuff around it, unless there's a clear sense to do that. Sometimes with wisdom, you know, I will go there and bring something before wisdom to gain understanding of it. But generally, if it's an encounter where I've gone, I really look to go back to those things and to draw continued revelation from them. You know, and the symbolism of them often is really, really important. You know, and you know, when you say, okay, it looked like it was blue and it looked like it was sort of almost like a dimensional thing you could put your hand through, you know, those things are symbolic because, and they're important because you wouldn't see it like that unless God wanted you to see it like that. And so it's then the more familiar we all are with these type of encounters, the easier it will be to understand what they are at the time. You know, so now if I see something in certain things, because I've been there before, then I understand this is what it's about. But often the first time I don't, you know, and I go back. You know, this recent encounter I had with the Galactic Council, you know, it was very much a, I'm here to observe, and it's like, whoa, this is really interesting. But, you know, I went back to God and asked him about it, and then I felt that I had access to go back. So when I went back again, I went and presented a case for our region for blessing and for different things before that council, for them to take it under advisement and for them in their sitting over the next couple of months to see. And they basically said, that's what they said, they are taking it under advisement to see what levels of judgment, justice, and grace are going to be released, you know. But I wouldn't have known to do that the first time I went, you know. So when I went, it was something that stirred me to find more. I then talked to God about it, and in talking to him about it, I went back over the previous occasions that he'd mentioned it to me, asked him about it, and that's when I felt stirred. And when I went there, I went really boldly, and I went to present something like, you know, I'm advocating on behalf of an area I have authority in, and I'm bringing this to see things released in a greater dimension of authority than I presently carry, because I can present the case, they have to authorize it and open up the realms and the doors into this realm to outwork it. So yeah, I think things like that, just I encourage you to seek the revelation for those things, because it may be sometimes very, very unique and particular to you. You know, although, you know, I might be able to interpret something through a gift of being able to do that, but it's better to, in a sense, find out what does it mean for me, and what was God revealing to me during that encounter, because a scroll would equal a mandate. So, and you felt that actually this almost like was a door to something else, so that might be what the mandate of the scroll is about, to take you into another dimensional shift in something, or access to things through that scroll which you didn't have before. You know, so yeah, I think that's as much as I could really say about blue lights from my own personal experience. So, anything else?
I think that sort of answers our next question, because we also saw a scroll that was sort of in the shape of a cross, goes, you know, across like to four corners,
yeah,
from one corner to the other. So I guess that answers that question too. We're going to ask you about that, but
okay. Yeah.
I would imagine it's the same answer.
Well, yeah, I mean, some of it like that, you know, if you saw a scroll in the form of an actual cross, or you saw four corners, like a diamond shape, or
not like a diamond shape. It's like you roll something out on one, you know, like you roll it out like this,
yeah.
And then another one you roll out across it like this, so it goes to four different points, west, east, east, north, south, west, and east.
Right, yeah, sure, I see, yeah. Well, that I would see as an aligning things with the four faces of God. When something's in that shape, it's the connections between the corners, and then those corners make four faces, which is the base of a pyramid, or a window or a doorway of opening. And so, you know, I've seen that a number of times, and it represents alignment. When you think of north, south, east, and west as well, it's alignment with the kingly and the prophetic and the apostolic and the priestly functions to establish a window that would open to allow things to come into fruition. So two scrolls doing that actually create four areas, as you say, four corners to it, which, you know, a lot of things about the four, you know, you have the four winds of heaven and the four doors of heaven. There's lots of fours, but they're all about opening and bringing things into a realm, you know, the four points of the compass and different things that were set. Definitely something which I think God is saying is going to bring an alignment.
And in this case, it was just a normal parchment kind of paper. It wasn't blue.
Which, you know, is you know, indicating there is things written on it. But when you do that, there's symbolisms. I mean, symbolism is really interesting if you find it interesting. It's really boring if you don't. You know, I find it really interesting because God speaks to me through symbols and things like that. So I find things like that are always significant for me because they trigger things. And so, you know, when I first saw my first instance of four things and a shape that was, you know, a base of a pyramid shape or a square on its side, or there's lots of different ways of viewing it depending on your perspective. You know, I saw it as a foundational thing that had those alignments with the four faces of God that would enable something to be established as foundation. And it's really interesting because I think a lot of people think of it, of, you know, Jesus being the cornerstone, this one corner. Well, actually, there's four corners. And you know, when you look back into the original language, it actually meant capstone. And so the capstone is the last stone that's put on the top that brings all the four corners together in a pyramid. You know, and a pyramid shape is what the New Jerusalem is. A lot of people think it's a square, but it isn't. And that's really why, or a cube, it's a pyramid. It has four corners, because if you look at it, it has a height, which is the same height as each of the bases. And Jesus is, again, the capstone, the cornerstone, the top of it, which brings it all together and ties it and keys it together into its alignment. I mean, I've always been drawn to pyramids, and I've been to the Great Pyramid of Giza probably four or five times, and I've been in it, and always wanted to understand, you know, what was it about that, and why was it built, and who built it, and how they built it, and felt there was something significant about it. You know, it is aligned very clearly with to a very high degree of accuracy to a heavenly alignment, and one day, you know, God took me on the timeline and showed me how it was built, and showed me the significance of the chambers that were inside, and that there's a hidden chamber in there, which was a trading floor, which the enemy had begun to try and use. So there's very interesting things that come out of encounters. You know, and you know, I have a very inquisitive nature, and I is part of my redemptive gift to want to know things and know how they work. So these sort of things do fascinate me, and I find that God gives me revelation about it. that opens up further things. You know, because we found that when we looked at this in terms of ministry, this was the foundation for ministry for us, that each of the four sides of that pyramid represented four areas of ministry, which now we've brought into alignment with the four faces of God and the kingly and the prophetic and the apostolic and the priestly. You know, and where, again, three is government, but four opens the blessing to be released. And so you always need the fourth priestly part in any shape to bring agreement between heaven and earth. And we can act in that priestly role, but when we are acting in a bench of three role in heaven, we're always looking for the earthly alignment to come into agreement with it, so that we can open up that realm and open up the realm of blessing to come through. Yeah, go on.
I can see now, as you're talking, how this could be, because I just drew it on my page here, how this it could be the foundational, and I didn't see the pyramid structure before, but now that you said it, I can see this is like a foundation of a pyramid structure. And also the fact that it was more of an earthly color kind of thing, more of a parchment, how it could be, as you said, the agreement on earth, sort of foundational.
Yeah.
I have to listen to it again, but it really did light up something for me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. These are interesting things, and they're significant things for us, because, you know, God uses numbers, he uses symbols to engage us and to engage in certain things which we begin to identify and align around. And as you're coming together, you need those foundational scrolls, and you need the foundational structure for that to be outworked, you know. And it'll be different in different places, because different places are not necessarily geographical. They may be operating differently, but in a sense of having something which you have a strong foundation, it's just really making sure that what are those scrolls, what are they saying, and, you know, getting the revelation of what they are, you know, and then authorizing them. You know, getting the angels assigned to them, you know, using those scrolls and the mandated authority that they release, then to begin to rule, and to declare and to call things into alignment and to being, and to see transformation takes place. You know, heavenly. You know, so it gets earthly outworked. So yeah. Okay.
Mike, at the bench, you're going together with a common mandate when you go up. So you find your mandate, you go up. The question I have, we've done that, we've also gone up with, as a group of three, with other people.
Yep.
Would that change, like, in that case, that would not be a bench of three? Or could you go up with, say, guests with you at a certain time or whatever?
I've certainly taken other people. We often, as a bench here, we go in together and we step into the area that we have thrones and mountain that covers the area here. We go and we get revelation, and we go into different courts together to see the practical outworking of things and what God is saying to us and things like that. But we also would take other groups with us to bring that agreement. And so, as an example, you know, when I went to the Court of Kings and I had a scroll, and the scroll was then authorized in the Court of Chancellors and was put into the Court of Scribes, I brought it to our bench of three. And we then went back into heaven to see, okay, how do we then administer this scroll? And we had a strategy that we needed to then bring the scroll, and I actually printed it out, and I brought it to our council of 12, that the three is of the 12. And if you think of the 12 apostles, you had three, Peter, James, and John, that you would say were their bench of three, but there was 12 of them. And Jesus took Peter, James, and John with him certain times to do things that he didn't take the other nine. And that seemed to be perfectly okay. And again, it's a bit of a picture to how things operate. You know, we operate within a council of 12, which represents, you know, our seven mountains and our five ministry areas, and the bench of three administers that. And so when we then took this scroll and we presented the scroll, we then, when it was agreed and everyone had agreed between heaven and earth, then we all 12 of us went back into the court of kings and spoke it out. And so we spoke it out and spoke out the scroll together. One of our people saw a real vision of what was going on and what God was doing at the time. And he was clothing people with things and doing things with people while we stood in that court. They shared that. So, you know, tonight we are getting together as a bench with our group of seven, which we would class, you know, we're just establishing this on a fresh foundation. And we are going to take the mandate for that group, and we're going to step into heaven together with it, and we're going to get it authorized together, and then we will release that group to get the mandate that they need to have to carry it. We authorize them, but then they need to get their mandate. And we will do that in a symbolic sense, that we would usually have a picture of it, and we will place that picture in the middle of the room, and we will use that as think we are taking this picture together into that realm, and depending on what it is and where we go, you know, we'll go to a one court or the other, or a different thing to do, and then you know, we will then release the mandates for those seven to actually function. So I would say, yeah, there's lots of occasions where we need to bring things into earthly alignment, and then we need to go into the heavens to ratify that. So things sometimes get ratified in heaven, you bring it to earth. We found then that if we all step in together, that brings the whole thing back to into its releasing its fulfillment. You know, but you know, these are just things we're learning as we go. And learning that, you know, whatever we have in terms of mandates and scrolls, you know, we need to make sure we actually use them correctly, and administer them. And I wouldn't do nothing now until I had a mandate. You know, so if I'm going to go somewhere or I'm going to do something, you know, I go to get a mandate specifically for it, and I can step in and get that, and then that gives me authority. You know, because I know I've been mandated to do something. You know, and a lot of things, it's like, you know, like getting invitations to go places. You know, I won't go to somewhere unless there's a mandate for me to go. So now I will go and make sure that I have that in place before I would accept an invitation to go and do something. Whereas before, you know, I would operate on a sense of peace and, okay, do I feel peaceful about this? Which is great to be peaceful about something, but that's not the same to carry authority towards it. You know, I can be peaceful that something's right, but it doesn't necessarily give me authority. So I want to make sure I have the authority to release whatever it is that God wants released in every situation and circumstance. So I definitely use scrolls and mandates much more differently. You know, when I first engaged them, it was all about, you know, getting a divorce papers or getting court orders to separate things in my own life, to deal with things, to break things, to transform me, which was sort of all the process of preparation. But now it's much more about releasing things and and using mandates to establish things and using mandates to open opportunities. You know, it's like in a couple of weeks' time, we are going to release a new season for us here, and we'll have a mandate to do that. And I have some specific things to go with that mandate, which were on the scroll to enable me to do that. You know, and then you seek, okay, what does that mean practically? What are we going to do practically to reflect what's in heaven? Because God is looking for a reflection on earth of what's in heaven. You know, so we outwork things. Quite often we do prophetic acts, and we begin to outwork that so that God recognizes it. He can see us doing it here because we've seen it there, and then that brings everything into an agreement, you know, which is why a lot of things needed to be done prophetically. And, you know, I think I wouldn't go into now, I wouldn't create a formula, but I would look to each occasion to see, what is it God's saying in this situation that we need to do to bring this prophetic act into manifestation, if you like, here. You know, so it's certainly a definite thing that you can take people. They can't go on your thrones because they belong to you, but you can take them into dimensions that you have access to, you know, and help them engage around, you know, the same vision. You know, and any individual, you know, in a sense, you know, you can take people individually and help them get on their mountains, or help them find a scroll, or help them find a mandate, you know, because that's just basic discipleship, where we can individually help people to engage. So, yeah.
I just wanted to ask, is the same pathway used for every time we go up?
Okay. I tend personally to find that you have to develop those pathways so that they become your pathways, and then you can choose which one that your spirit directs you on. So the two main pathways are the pathway that goes through the first love gate and back into the realm of heaven, following the river of life to engage in the garden of God and those whole sort of relational pathways. And then the other pathway for me, you know, because that is the, you know, the pathway from Revelation 3:20 of opening the door. But then the other pathway, you know, is Revelation 4:1. You know, there is a door standing open in heaven, and that's the pathway that God showed to Jacob. And it was the pathway that Jesus had, because there was an open heaven over him and the angels were ascending and descending. And so I usually step through that pathway of going through the open door, of seeing that there's a ladder or steps that can take me into the realm of heaven for rulership. Now, that's not to say that once you're in the realm of heaven, you can't go from one place to another by thought, if you've been there and if the pathway is established for you. You know, so long as it's a place that you can, you know, you can engage, then I can think. So I could be, I don't know, at the tree of life and eating the fruit or taking the scrolls from the leaves of the tree, and I can immediately think, I need to take this scroll to a court. So I'm going to go to that court, and I don't have to go back through the gateway and then go up the other pathway, because once I'm in that realm, I can cross through the different veils by my thought process, because it's something that's established within me and they're connected. And, you know, once it's like that, it's a lifestyle rather than something we're trying to develop. You know, I think I've mentioned it before, you know, we use scaffolding to build the house, but once we live in the house, we don't need the scaffolding. And so the pathways are very helpful to see it that way, because there's a process that we can develop to enable us to engage those pathways. But once they become formed in us, then we can go there. You know, when I want to go to the Garden of God, you know, I don't need to think about going up the waterfall or through the river or walking along the path or going over the bridge. I can just go there, you know, and I can go there because I've been there from in realms above that in terms of the judgment seat and different places, and I've come down into that realm through the waterfall, you know, and I've gone up through that realm. But now it means I can just think about it, you know, I want to engage there. So that's how I do it. You know, I fix my thinking on where I want to go, and my thoughts take me there in an instant, because that's how the kingdom operates, by the power of conscious thought. But it's very helpful for us to, before we connect like that, to just have the pictures and the patterns and the pathways, because we build that up as a sort of a thing within us that can enable us to engage. And I'm not saying that there aren't other pathways, because when you go to the heights, you know, there's four pathways that I've encountered there that meet in this crossroads type thing. And there are four doors that I've encountered there that also take me through to dimensions, you know, under the earth and into the stars and into the atmosphere and things. So those are places that I know that I can go to engage, you know, and it seems seemingly for me at this point, I need to go to the pathways on the heights to go through those doors. I haven't been able to just think about going through those doors. So there's something about those doors that need to be accessed through wisdom. And so there are other places and other things, I think, that we can engage with. But it's as God leads us in developing that in our own lives. You know, other people may well be able to go to things, you know, in a dimension differently. But that's how it works for me, and it is finding out works for each of us, you know. But you know, when you look at John, you know, it said immediately he was in the Spirit. Once he accepted the invitation to come up here, he was actually up there in his spirit. Whereas previously, in the previous three chapters, if you think in Revelation 1:8, he was having a vision. He wasn't there, but he was having a vision of there, and then he was invited to come there. So maybe there is a progression or a process that when we engage and we're shown things and we see visions of things, then those are the doorways that we use to go stepping through into those things. And once we're in there, then we are much more engaged with the whole of our senses rather than we are observing something or seeing something. But even when we're observing and seeing things, you know, there's often a physical manifestation. Like when Daniel was watching the vision, he was shaking, trembling, you know, and he went weak at the knees, and the angel had to come and pick him up. Because there was such a connection with what he was seeing, but he was very much seeing it as a vision, you know. But where certainly John went there, and his spirit went there, and that's what we're looking to do. Go from visions to visitation, and ultimately to habitation, where our spirit is so connected there that it's always there, and connected here. Through our soul and body. So, you know, there's a process in most things that we go through. And so, you know, vision, visitation, habitation, I think that's part of our pathways in the journey of engagement there. You know, but it takes time and it takes practice and things to actually do it.
So I want to ask, what is happening now to me? Because as you were talking about that, I'm experiencing I'm experiencing I'm a bit overcome. I don't really understand why, but I don't understand why as you're talking about those things, I'm feeling blessed to God. I'm a bit overcome, but I don't know why. So, could you just explain what has happened to me? Why am I feeling like this right now? Sorry to ask you that question, but I don't understand why. I do feel the presence of God,
yeah.
And that like in my head, I can't figure out why.
Sure. Well, you know, when we get such an emotional response to something like that, it's often because it is connecting with our destiny. And, you know, your destiny, I think, is to help others into those realms and to be able to help others engage in those pathways. And so when we connect, you know, and you're spiritually sensitive, when we connect with those things, it's like it connects with the whole of us. And as you've dealt with, you know, you've been opening your gateways and you've been working at this stuff. Therefore, there's a sense where you're beginning to engage body, soul, and spirit rather than just spirit, and therefore, emotionally, we can become overwhelmed or touched by talking about certain things and certain principles and certain things that we begin to talk about for other people that may not be so connected to their destiny that it doesn't have the same effect on them, you know. And actually, you know, looking at you now in the spirit realm, there's angelic activity around you, you know, and, you know, there's angels around and behind you that are moving. And so sometimes, you know, that activity of the angelic, because they get excited. When we begin to connect with destiny, they begin to get excited because they've been assigned to you. You know, they're your ministering spirits to help you to into your fullness of inheritance. And so there's a sense of joy, and one of the angels behind you is twirling, and the robe and the things that they carry in terms of the colors is actually flowing around you, which is some of what you're experiencing. You're experiencing that excitement, and the movement of the angelic and the colors of that angel. It's like that angel has okay, it's difficult to describe it because it's like layers and layers of very fine silk or garments that are flowing and moving, and there's a sense of as that's moving around you, those garments are shimmering, and you are being touched by them as there's movement there. So, you know, if that helps. So is there anything else around that, or anyone else got a question?
Mike.
Yeah.
We use a protocol where we go first to before the arc with the four faces, and then into the scroll room.
Yeah.
back. He's back. Right.
Yeah. It seemed to just drop out there for a second, but yeah, I'm sort of back into it.
So we went up the old hey, Vahey, and then into the scroll room. Is there a reason that is that correct? And is there a reason that we're going before the four phases first?
I tend to go to the Holy of Holies, and as my place of direction every day. So as I present myself as a living sacrifice before God, it is so that He can direct me in service. And that's where, for me, coming around the ark in that place is looking to engage with the resonant frequency of God's will. So what does He want me to do today? And I find that, you know, there's new mercies every morning. I find it's a daily thing. I think if people don't connect daily, then they're on yesterday's manna, and it didn't last more than a day. Our relationship with God has to be daily. And therefore, each day I present myself as a living sacrifice. Each day I open my first love gate, because I believe that God is looking for my engagement each day in intimacy with Him, and then to engage with Him to find out what is His will for me today. There is His general will for everybody and all the basic things we should all do. Is He specific? You know, Jesus only did what He saw the Father doing. So I want to see what the Father's doing. And so I go to the ark, and, you know, before I go into the ark, it's like I think about the scriptures, you know, not my will but yours be done. So it's like I'm no longer in government over my own life. I've surrendered that government to Him, and He is enthroned on the mountain within my spirit. And then it's like, you know, the other scripture that I tend to think about is, you know, I only want to do what I see you doing. And so I go to the ark to look into the manifestation of God's presence within the cherubim, you know, and, you know, how God really got me to engage with it was He basically said to me, you know, one of the cherubim that's is missing because Lucifer fell, who was one of the covering cherubim, who looked into the things of God. And so it's a connection between that and the other cherubim, which creates the ark for God's presence to manifest. Because the presence of God didn't come into the Holy of Holies other than when the priest came and formed that connection by speaking the names of God, and that formed a portal or an opening for God to come into this realm. Now, of course, when we go back into the realm of heaven, it's not quite the same, because obviously He's already there. But what I found is my engagement with there initially was I stood and looked into the frequency of God's presence, His voice, so that I could come into resonance with it, and I could harmonize with it, and come into agreement and alignment with it. And so I was looking, what is your will for me today? And then it would be like, you know, Jesus said, you know, the manna or the food was to do His will. You know, He said to His disciples, I have food that you know not of. My food is to do the will of Him that sent me. And so the pot of manna within the ark, for me, represented that food, and I would take that as I want to take your will that is going to empower me and equip me this day to outwork whatever it is you called me to do, and that is that will be fulfilling in every way to me. And so that was my first sort of looking in around the ark, and then I then began to have this revelation about, you know, actually the four faces. And because I kept seeing something of one of the faces of God there, as I began to look into it, you know, more intimately, and then I found that my heart began to change by going there regularly. And I mean by that, the affections of my heart or the desires of my heart started to again become aligned much more with my destiny scroll. Because again, there's things written in there, the tablets of stone, but God now says that he writes on the tablets of our heart. And it's like we draw near to him there, and we're drawing near to engagement with our destiny there. And it becomes revealed or unfurled to us, you know, onto our hearts, which will draw us, and desires will draw us towards it. You know, and so that's how it began to go for me. And then I then sort of, you know, had that revelation. And I think last year I met Ian, and he began talking about, again, this alignment, which so much made sense to me, because I'd seen this pyramid shape as a ministry shape, and I saw that actually that had an alignment with the four faces of God. And then when I actually saw, hey, they are revolving and moving in this setting, and I can be in them, and therefore look out from there through the eyes of the lion, and then I can speak through the mouth of the lion, because I'm in God. And so it became a place where I could be in him to see from his perspective and to speak from his perspective from one of those four different faces, in a sense, because I seem to find that it would be, I found engagement there, you know, and I kept being drawn back in a particular season to one. And to start with, it was always the eagle. And I was always drawn to the eagle. But then, you know, recently I've been drawn also to the lion, and, you know, and in other engagements. So I found that I've connected there, you know, and I don't think it's a formula that you have to go there before you have to go to another scroll room or a record room. I just find that when I go there, it gives me direction to where else to go. I find that I get my spirit gets drawn to where I need to go from here. So sometimes I'll go from there to my mountain, and I'll take the symbol of authority, the scepter, you know, Aaron's rod from there, to go and release what I've seen, to call forth and frame my day. Because we get to frame our own day. And so we go to our mountain and we begin to frame our day. So what we've had revealed there in the Holy of Holies, and as a resonance with God's voice, I then can speak and echo that voice or speak that voice out to frame my day, which may mean calling things into being. It may mean moving mountains that are obstacles to my day. It may mean declaring. It may mean loosing things which are in the way. You know, lots of different things, using the keys of the kingdom from my mountain to frame my day. And so that's how I've sort of developed to come into intimacy that is to do with rulership rather than just intimacy, which is to do with relationship and identity. I find that takes place around the ark there. And so I would sometimes go from there to a courtroom, or I would go from there into other places, into the realm of heaven, or go to the heights and I meet wisdom, simply because my spirit gets so drawn to God that it gets released into something that comes out of that place of resonance. But I've also sometimes, you know, gone into the realm of heaven and asked Jesus just to take me where he wants me to go. And sometimes he would take me directly to somewhere or somewhere. Sometimes, again, by thought, I can think, no, I'm going to the mobile court. You know, I'm going to go there because I need to do something. I need to do something particular in that. So very much, you know, it's a relationship rather than a formula. But there are things that we learn in the relationship where there are places where we find it easier to engage. And I find that a daily place for me, because I want my relationship with God to be a daily living thing rather than, I'm just going to do what I did yesterday. no, I want it daily. So I want to go and find out what is my day, and then I can then bring and try to establish that day, release the favor of God on that day, release the connections that need to be made that day. Just begin to see that I am responsible for ruling my mountains, and I can do that much more clearly when I know what it is that God is, you know, releasing on a daily basis. You know, there are some things you do ahead of time, and there are some things you do definitely do to create things for the future. But we also have to live daily and outwork things daily, and I want to make sure that that's as aligned as possible with what God's will is for me today, so that I can fulfill it and outwork it. If that helps. Yeah, so anything else following up from that, or anything else you'd like to do? Yeah.
I have a question on the gate.
Okay.
It seems to me that the ultimate, what we're trying to do is, in our gates, having the Holy Spirit governing over our spirit, and our spirit governing over our soul, our soul governing over our body, is to connect with, say, for example, the Father in eternity, to be resonating in His judgment and holiness and its fruits of patience, kindness, and goodness, and then in each of those gates, really resonating the image of our bearing, the resonant image of God in each of those gates and in the atmosphere around us, the same with Christ and the same with coming one with the Holy Spirit. Be the end result of what we're trying to do. That's right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean...
And that's really it.
Yeah, so we manifest and connect up with the realm of the Spirit. So there's the eternal realm where we're connecting up with the realm of heaven, but also the unseen realm, which is around us, which we're looking to make sure that we are in authority over, to see the kingdom manifested around our lives and through us. So, you know, working through those gateways is important. I mean, there's always new stuff to discover. You know, because my engagement in these things was very encountered based and taken by God to see things and do things initially, I did miss out some things because I felt drawn towards certain operations in terms of the gateways particularly. So when I open my first love gate and I get so encaptured by the presence of God, I never really thought too much about my spirit and what it looked like and what was there, because my thought would be, hey, let's get through the spirit gateways to engage the soul, because I want my soul in alignment and I want my body functioning out of that. So I never really thought about my spirit. And so yesterday morning we had a question and answer time here in terms of vision, and someone asked about, well, where is my garden of my heart, and is it in my spirit? Where is this doorway? And I answered them, and then, but I thought while I was answering it, I've never really thought about what my spirit looks like I've thought about what my heart looks like and the garden looks like and the dance floor and soaking room. You know, I've engaged there and I know what they look like. Actually, I've never really taken time to actually engage, other than, hey, we're in intimacy and I love this, your presence, and I know the river of life is flowing from under the doorway of the gate of first love, and it trickles out when we don't open the doorway, but it gets deeper as we invite that out. But I never really thought about it. So yesterday, in our engagement, in our worship here, I thought, I'm going to go and I'm going to engage in my spirit, and I'm going to look and see what it is and where it is and what's there. And so I did, and I stood by the first love gateway, And I'd never even thought about that it was a gateway that actually has, it's the realm of the kingdom within me. You know, that when I open that door, I'm connected to the realm of the kingdom, the rule of God. But I'd always looked at sort of the main thing is I want to open the door. But as I looked at it yesterday, I saw that the door was part of a big pillar of cloud almost that went up into the realm of heaven for my spirit. And it immediately came to me, it's like that's what they sought to do by building the Tower of Babel. And they tried to do it in the flesh, but it was actually already available in the spirit. And that was the same thing that the ladder going up into heaven was really about. And it was about that place of engaging in the realm of the spirit, in the realm of heaven that's in us. And so I was looking at this thing, and then I sort of think, so I look and say, okay, I see the river of life is flowing here, and it's like I'm looking around, and I'm looking at the gateway itself, and I can see its shape, and I began to look at the color of it and things. And then it was like, okay, so where am I? So I looked around, and I'm actually at the top of a mountain. So I'm actually at the top of the mountain, which is the seat of government in my life, which is connected to this realm. And I look around, and there's a throne. And, of course, every day when I open the door of first love, I yoke myself to Jesus. So I'm surrendering the mountain of God, the mountain of my life, to God each day. So there's a big throne there. And Jesus is sat on it. And so I stand to really start to look and engage. And then I find there's another throne there, which is joined to his throne, which is actually, I can be sat on it. And so as I surrender to the Lordship of Christ within my spirit, then he tutors me to rule so that my spirit can rule from a position of authority because it's on the mountain. And so then I was looking, well, where does the river go? Because where are my gates in relation to this mountain? And I found that there's a scripture that says, there is a river whose streams makes glad the city of God. And so I saw that this river was flowing like streams down to my gateways. And as I looked down, I could see that this was all flowing down and then flowing through my gateways and to engage out through my soul. So that made a whole lot of sense to me. It might not make sense to anybody else, but it made sense to me because, you know, I think of where is the seat of government? You know, and actually what am I doing? I know that God is equipping me to rule as a son where he is enthroned in heaven and we're totally in oneness. You know, 1 Corinthians 6:17. You know, he who is joined to the Lord is one spirit, and there's oneness and there's unity of spirit. But in the process of that, he's tutoring us in lordship. You know, obviously, before that, in servanthood and friendship, and then lordship, kingship, sonship. And so I began to see that whoever was on the throne that I surrendered to would determine what level of authority I was operating in within the throne of my own life, whether I was operating in lordship, kingship, or sonship. And so I'm going to explore that some more and actually see, do I get the same function in my spirit that I get within my garden to create things? And I need to explore that, because at the moment I'm thinking, no, my spirit has been eternally created by God, so he's probably fixed it, maybe what it is, but maybe it looks differently for all of us. I don't know. I'm gonna have some fun seeing whether I can do anything with my spirit to create it and change it, or actually whether it's what God has set, and therefore I need to explore and find out what he's already set. And I guess this may well tie in with destiny, because I actually found that, you know, the way I functioned before I engaged any of this stuff, there were certain gates of my spirit that were more connected to my soul. My soul drew life from my spirit, particularly through several gates. And now those are the things I then had to sever the independence of it and then open the gates to actually feed real life to flow out so that my soul could be connected to the life that's flowing through those streams that are coming from the river of God. So there are so much, it's a journey, you know, and an adventure. And I just found some new things that I'd never really thought about. But it was prompted by someone asking me to describe what it looked like, and I couldn't because I'd never even thought about it, you know. But where I couldn't describe my garden down to everything because I have been part of creating, tending, and cultivating that garden, you know, whereas this really represents the connection to the garden of God, which is his. He has sort of made it, I guess. But I'm going to sort of do a little bit more exploration in that. I don't know if that sort of helps.
I wanted to ask one more question.
Okay.
We were having a discussion about the way our bodies are made, like the earth, and carry the same elements like potassium and zinc and iron and all of these different things. And so we're having a discussion about the gold in us, and I think I heard that Ion had talked about the earth wasn't the earth as we saw it, and it was of a different substance, and that that is why. Well, so my own deduction now, I'm thinking as we're having, maybe that's why we have to dig for gold and diamond and all these things. And how is it that we acknowledge the other elements in our bodies and we have never really acknowledged the other stuff? And then we continue this discussion about how now people manifest gold, oil, jewelry coming out of their hands, out of their mouth, falling around them. So I'm thinking, I don't have a complete clarity of it, I'm thinking there is something that is on the increase of bringing things into alignment to do with the earth and our bodies and how we were made, and maybe when the fall happened, like we fell through all these layers that I mentioned, and that's not my original thought. I heard someone said it, I don't know if it's Jason Westerfield or Ian Clayton. And so maybe there is some realignment or some shifting that is happening. That's why there is an increase of these things that are being manifested out of our bodies, like having all this gold dust everywhere. And as I was speaking with Angela first about this, and she said my face started to get all this gold in it as we were speaking about it. So I don't know if you could just talk a little bit about that, if you can.
Okay. The dust of the earth that God used to create Adam was not the dust of the dirt, if you like, because at that point in time, Adam was made in the garden of God. So he was made in the realm of the garden of God, and the realm of the garden of God has, in the garden of God, there is a golden mountain, and there is a residue that when God created the garden and then planted Adam and Eve within the garden in this realm, it was connected to the realm of the garden of God. And so when God walked in the cool of the day in the garden, they were connected. And so the residue was, you know, I mean, Ian talks about, I think he talks about monoatomic gold, and that our whole bodies were designed to be the best conductor of frequency that there is, because, you know, that's why they make gold connections on stereo things and audio things, because gold is the best connector and transmitter of frequency. And so as Adam, you know, his spirit and the light as a light being was around him. He was clothed in that as a sense of glory that shone. Now, when he sinned, and when they sinned, their spirit went within and imploded onto the inside, and then they were covered with skins, and the blood system and the whole blood system formed, rather than them being operating in light and everything being communicated through frequency and sound within their bodies. They then took on their natural DNA, and the third strand of DNA, which was the light strand, was separated. And so there is definitely, when we get born again, that third strand of light is at the center within the other strands of our DNA, which then is designed to bring things back into the frequency, or the light frequency, which is the information that carries our destiny and carries God's will, and is in tuned with, you know, our body. And so as we then open our gateways, we're looking for things to flow from our spirit out around us to recreate what was originally what Adam had. And I think Jesus's transfiguration, where he shone with such brilliance, was, you know, the physical manifestation of what that is and what that will be. And I believe that, you know, there are those who have come into that level of alignment so that their light DNA is determining their physical body, not just their physical DNA, and therefore DNA and resequencing DNA to bring alignment is really important. Now, there are also each of those elements that our physical body is made up of carries a frequency. And, you know, there are those who are using those frequencies to make music. So using, you know, David Van Coovering and I think John Tussey, or they are getting revelation of this, and they're looking to use sounds and frequencies, vibrations, to bring an alignment so that everything's back into an alignment with heaven, an alignment with the spiritual reality. And each of our organs of our body has a particular frequency, and when they're not healthy, they're out of frequency, and their frequency drops, and therefore they are not healthy. And so there is a sense where all this revelation of essential oils and fragrances and musical frequencies and sound, you know, our thoughts can change our DNA, and our thoughts are just frequencies of electromagnetic energy. So all this stuff works together, and so there is a connection. And I think you're right, the sense of gold and jewels and things of that nature are, when you go back and you look at the garden in the original garden where the river of life came out of heaven, the river of life, it says, is crystal. So it comes as crystal. So the closer you get to the throne of God, the more crystalline, although it's not solid, it is, the thicker it becomes, if you like. By the time it's traveled all the way out of heaven and come through us, it's much thinner, if you like. But it carries with it, and can carry with it, those things that come out of heaven. And so the gold and the jewels and the things are coming out of the river of life. And therefore, once we're connected with that in our spirit, then we should see that manifested through our soul and body. And so the gold dust, you know, and some of that transposed, you know, years ago when I spent some time in Brazil, you know, there were many people that were getting gold teeth, you know, and things like that, and replacement fillings were made of gold, and there are some people just teeth were actually turned into gold. Lots of things like that, which is a sign, you know, and a wonder but it was all to draw us near to God so that those things begin to manifest more and more. And when you read when the four rivers split in four and went out to water of the earth, you actually see when it talks about the different names there, those different names, one of them had gold, you know, and it talks about, you know, that it was a place of gold. Well, where did that gold come from? Well, it came out of a flow of the river that came out from the garden that God had given them to tend and look after. Now, you know, our heart now represents that garden connected up to the river of life coming out of heaven and through our spirit, so that we can again manifest the fullness of heaven on earth, which I believe will be a genetic transformation of our bodies to bring them into that glorious body, which will manifest those things. You know, and at the moment, I think we're seeing symbolic manifestations of them in gold and in jewels and in different things, but eventually I think it will be a manifestation of glory, like the transfiguration, where it will be light that is being, you know, because in a sense, gold glitters and gems sort of shine, but it's the light that causes both of those things to take place. So we've got to focus on the light, and the light, God is light. You know, and our spirits are light. We are light beings of light. You know, when Jesus appeared before Paul, he appeared as a being, a ball of light on the road to Damascus. You know, that's his. And when our actual physical form in the realm of heaven is light. You know, and when people from the occult realm look at Christians, they recognize them by the amount of light. And so those that are shining, they don't want to go near. Those that are only flickering, they feel that are a target. So we're going to make sure we have the light of God actually manifesting in us, because our spirit is reflecting that and is actually light. You know, our spirit is light. You know, and in a sense, everything. I think on one of the Facebook pages, someone put an Einstein quote about, you know, if you align frequencies, then it success is guaranteed when you get frequencies aligned. And so the key in these things is getting the frequencies aligned and getting our physical body frequencies made up of the elements aligned with our spiritual frequencies to bring them into complete wholeness and to see transformation take place. But it's fun stuff, and I think then when we engage in the dance floor, we're engaging with the nine strands of light DNA of God, Father, Son, and Spirit, and they begin to touch us at a genetic level to bring again those transformations. And then when we get in the soaking room is all about the oils and the frequencies of sound and fragrance that again bring us back into alignment. And so we need to spend time there. The more we spend time in those places, the more starts to happen within the genetic makeup and in our DNA light, as well as the natural DNA. It just takes time. It's not an instant thing. And then when we engage in taking the body and blood of Jesus in terms of the communion, we're again taking on the resonant frequency that he carries within his body to transform our body. Because now his body is a spiritual body. But when we engage in that, it can begin to transform our physical body into alignment with his spiritual body. I'm sure there are other people who've probably got much more insight into the particular aspects of that. I think, you know, I sort of have a general overview of what I think God is doing in some of these things.
Thank you.
Okay, well, it's 11 o'clock my time. So I need to go prepare for the next hangout I've got soon.